Oh, it's going, right? It counted down already?
I missed it. It counted down.
I was tapped out. Crap. Shopping Maniacs, you're listening to another episode of Shop Talk Show. I was totally tapped out for the intro there. Hey, wait. I'm Dave. With me is Chris. Chris, who do we got in the studio today?
Ah, friend of the show, Mr. Fred Schott, captain, leader, probably has a cool official title over at the Astro company.
Steward. Yeah, you're right. How'd you know? It's Steward.
Oh, cool. I like Steward. That's a great word. Well, that's close to Stuart, which I don't like. Sorry, all the Stuarts out there. Just kidding. I probably do like you. This is it's a big week. As we're recording this, you know, your podcatchers are giving you this on a Monday where we typically record on Thursdays. Did you know that, everybody? That's just a Dave and I thing from way back. I don't even remember how we got into it, but it's locked in now. What was it? Monday, Tuesday? When'd you launch it, Fred? There's a big release that you're going to tell us all about at Astro, and we have questions.
Big ol' Astro release. Can we spend some more time with that character at the start of the show that Dave was doing, like stoned cowboy?
Michael McConaughey.
When's Matthew he coming back on the pod? Yeah, yeah, bring him back in here.
All right. We are here, man. We are talking about it, man. All right. So anything new?
Yeah, it's been a busy week. We just launched AstroDB, which is a hosted database platform for Astro, designed for the framework, designed for people building Astro sites. It's a really unique take on what a database looks like, and tying it so close to the framework, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. And
And Astro together? Crazy. Whoa, and there's a Chris, lot to talk about.
Is content just data? Is data content? Is content data?
That's my favorite thing, because since you launched this thing, and you meaning you plus the whole team of people that you work with, right? We'll give credit where credit's due, whatever. That Astro is great for content sites. It's kind of rare, actually, for site builders like that to be like to call out what they're good at, because everybody wants to tell you that they're good at everything because they want everybody to try it, you know? And sometimes they're more right about that than wrong, you know, like there is niches, you know, any developer will know there is niches for certain types of tools. And it's like, God, if a tool would just tell you that, that'd be freaking nice, wouldn't it? But so Astro did. They're for content size, but sometimes content is wonderful in just a markdown file sitting in a repo. I don't think that's going anywhere, right? That's great for blogging. It's particularly great for PRs and stuff against those repos. But not all data is particularly good in a markdown file. You can't write a hit counter in a markdown file, you know? And at some point, data just gets too much for flat files. It just isn't appropriate. Even comments, you know, which I think it was smart that you made that kind of a first-class citizen of like the documentation and stuff. Like, what if comments? Perfect use case for data storage of some kind. So what were people doing before on Astro? Like it or not, it was probably nothing to some degree. You know, people are just like, I don't like any of the options. Or, you know, they wire up their own kind of something, something, something. Now you've said, I have the perfect answer for you. Here it is on a silver platter. So there's your intro. I want to know how it works. What does AstroDB mean to you, Fred?
Yeah, I mean, that comments example is the perfect kind of, I think it's a perfect, it encapsulates so much, because it's, you ask what do people do before? And yeah, it was probably nothing, or they set up a full like database on AWS, or like maybe like a kind of modern provider. Maybe they used a headless CMS for this and were like kind of hacking their headless CMS for this sort of use case. There's like a million different things, but all of them were pretty go out in the woods and figure it out and come back with something kind of thrown together with duct tape and super glue. And this is a perfect example of where a lightweight database can come in, where you can keep your content on whatever platform. Maybe it's still Markdown, maybe it's a CMS. And what if you just added a comment system that's run out of your own database? So you own the data. It's not a third-party system or a SaaS product that you're paying for. It's a database. It's running. You own the SQL, and it's connected to your content wherever that still lives. Yeah, I love that. Sorry, I love the comment example so much, so I just get excited whenever anyone brings it up.
It's a perfect one. It really is good.
Yeah, I could maybe find a third-party comment system, Discus or whatever.
Sure, there you go.
Puts a few viruses on the page, but whatever. It's fine. But, you know, if I want to be like, no, I want like an emoji reaction machine or the hand claps from Medium or whatever, you know, like now I'm in like roll my own tech situation. And so, but not with Astro. Now you have first party tech kind of. Do you consider it first party tech? Is it first party tech?
Yeah. Sorry. I got so excited. I didn't even talk about what it is. So AstroDB, it's a couple things. When you start it up, it's a local database. So it's powered by LibSQL, which is this modern fork of SQLite. And the big thing about that is that when you're doing local development, you're not spinning up Docker, you're not spinning up Postgres or MySQL. It's a literal database file for local development. So you have the driver. It can run in the browser. Like if you open up in Stackblitz, there's a WASM build of the driver. Like it's so cool, super lightweight, and basically instant database.
And it's light, but it's still MySQL essentially, right? It's still this, it's basically a SQL database. It just happens to be a file.
We've been hitting it with a lot of traffic. It's one of the reasons we've been so excited. So LibSQL is, if people don't know, it's the Terso team essentially went and forked SQLite and said, we want to add a bunch of modern stuff to it. We don't think it should be this like dinky light database. We want to prove out that the tech is solid enough that this can stand on its own. So global replication, scaling, like all this cool stuff is built in. And yeah, we've been pretty shocked by, its reputation as a simple database is not, I think, with a ton of merit. If you're building like the next like Facebook, maybe consider other options. But for everything I've ever built in my entire career,
you can still have multiple tables and like it's still a relational database.
It's everything that MySQL can do. Yeah, exactly. It's a relational database. It's got all the primitives.
Right. And if you really want to write like select star from posts where ID is greater than 100. You're going to do that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to because you didn't get to it yet, but you included an ORM, which is, I don't know, it's just like a nicer way to query for stuff, right? Basically, it's like...
And this all came out of... So we still have the same content collections. If you worked with Markdown, you're loading Markdown from a file system. We're basically giving you a like type safe schema API over that. But this all actually started from a place of like, as we started to add more filtering and sorting and groups, like, oh God, we're just building a database. Like everything that SQL gives you for free, we're actually having to build as JavaScript and it's slower. It's loading it all into memory. Mm. So we actually came to the idea of like, what if there was a database built for Astro from a content first perspective? We're like, they're kind of sitting next to each other now. They're kind of doing different jobs, but it's very much coming from that use case of like, yeah, this should do all the things that I need to work with data. It's just essentially, how do I access that data? Why reinvent the wheel? You have 20 years of 30 years. You have so much experience built up with SQL, tooling built around it. It's a pretty great tech.
Yeah. Okay. And it's first party is a cool way to put it, right? Because it's super tied at the hip to Astro itself. You didn't launch a data service that just anything can use, right? It's really customized to just Astro.
Right now, like technically, there's nothing stopping anyone from self-hosting it, but we're building this to be essentially a fully kind of integrated experience, which means there's both the local development, there's a schema API, there's the ORM, and then there's the hosted database. And all these things are designed to work well together. There's opinions, there's whole workflows that are designed by us because we think they make the most sense. They're simple. It's better than any database I've ever thrown together myself because it's gotten so much thought and care put into it of these workflows.
Right. In your launch post, you even called out like, hey, maybe we could have made this work with like D1 or whatever, this Cloudflare's thing, which is designed to be generic, right? Like Cloudflare is a different world. They don't have a CMS or whatever their site builder tool they're trying to build. They're trying to build infrastructure that anybody can use, which is nice. Maybe you could have made that work, but you intentionally were like, you know, there's some extra crap we don't want here. Like, and that's okay. Like you made opinionated choices to ship a product that's just, you know, smooth as butter, right? Like there's nothing weird about it.
I don't know if anyone knows, there's a Hacker News comment that lives in my brain rent-free of when Dropbox announced on Hacker News, like what, ages ago now, the top comment was, this is ridiculous. I could do this all myself. I'd set up a FTP server and I'd download the client on all my devices and I would run that out of my basement and it would all like, why does anyone need Dropbox? And it's like, I think there's something here about that where it's like, if anyone asks like, why don't I just use SQLite myself? Like you absolutely should. It's great, but it's a lot you have to do yourself that we're going to basically streamline for you into a full workflow.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can do all these things yourself. We're not, it's nothing being reinvented here, but that's kind of its power as well, is if you don't want to do that.
And then the connection to WordPress is so interesting too, is that that's what they're doing. They have both. They have this data layer, and then they have this like templating front end layer, and nobody thinks that's weird. A lot of people think that's pretty darn good, actually, you know. And then they have APIs that are like query posts, and then you say what you want, and then you get that data, and then you use it in the template. And to a lot of people, they're like, yeah, like computers or whatever, like that's how it's supposed to work. But somehow in the world of like this, you know, maybe the Jamstack era or whatever, maybe that's ended or that word got weird or whatever. But the site building tools left that behind. They did not, Homie didn't play that with static site generators. They're like, I don't know, just get your data from somewhere or something. And so now it's changing again.
Why did you kill Jamstack, Fred? Why'd you kill Jamstack?
Personally, with a knife in the reading room.
I do think, Astro was kind of the Jamstack, or 11D and Astro, you know, just like the Jamstack tool. And then I don't, this changes it, but it still like feels Jamstack. It's like I have my database here. It's like it could be a file on my server or, you know, in the production one. But it's not like a full MySQL running too. You know, it's different to me. It's not like, it's like a very simple, it has the ethos of Jamstack, I feel like, still.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, we came in too late. Like we're late stage Jamstack, if that's, I might be the first person who's ever said that, but
late stage.
Like we're trying, I think, figure out what were the good parts of it if we're going to kill the term, which it seems like everyone is okay with, which is kind of, kind of wild, but
it's a little wild.
What were the good parts of it? And I think it was, you know, this is still reliance on front end tech as the, like, it's the most important part of this story. The APIs are powering the website. It's not like the website is in service of some database. Like it's still the, and maybe like you could say Vercel's front end cloud is kind of this, like there's a real importance on having a great front end experience. And then I think it's about how can you empower that developer to do more? Yeah. Giving them a database. There's like all of a sudden infinite kind of creativity options.
Yeah.
I think it's all coming from the same ethos, I guess, even if the words and marketing are all changing around.
Mm. Even like a choice elimination thing. Like I still want to get into some of the like limitations of SQLite, but like from a choice elimination standpoint, I don't need to think about what database. Oh, NoSQL. Oh, you know, like Cassandra, you know, no, I just use this SQLite, or I don't have to like provision a Postgres on AWS or hook it all up. You know, it's like, it's here. But I guess kind of getting, everything's a trade-off, right? Like, so what are the trade-offs with choosing or going with SQLite? I mean, what am I not getting?
Yeah. So there's what it's known for. And then I'd say the reality that we've been experiencing, which we're still early. We need like benchmarks and all this stuff. We got to be able to like kind of back up our work. But anecdotally, just from our own experience, really trying to break this thing, like it's handling, you know, thousands of concurrent requests. I think people have gotten it scaling up to like tens of thousands. Maybe I'm kicking myself because I don't remember the actual scale, but it's some factor of thousands, many, many thousands possibly of.
That's, you know, like Hacker News concurrency.
Yeah. Right? It's like, this is serious tech. You can build something very scalable on this. And like anything, it depends on what you're doing, how complex is the query and all that. But at the end of the day, we haven't seen this to be like a super limiting for like web traffic. I'd say a lot of database like conversations and what like and web developer tech conversations kind of get messy a little bit, where it's like, is this database scalable to a database backend architect means like how many millions of queries are we talking per second? Like, I want to build a logging system on this. Is that possible? And for the web, it's like, that's usually not what we're talking about. The performance profile of SQLite and LibSQL, which we're using, it's really read optimized. So you're getting really great read performance, and writes are the thing that are less of the priority. So you still get those many thousands of writes per second. But for most websites, like it's read heavy, right? You're loading a lot of pages and then some number of users are interacting. But read optimized is what I describe as the web. It's much more about reads. So for our use case, content focused especially, it's really the perfect kind of fitted. We haven't seen any use case that hasn't been able to handle even a future like 10x growth of your site with SQLite.
Yeah, it's all the interview questions like, what's the O of N of this? You know, it's like, well, if N is only ever going to be 100, does it matter? Like, like I just, I know that it does, but it's just like, if it's 10 or 100, what is the penalty?
Yeah, there's like a snarky answer to that question, which is like, you don't have any users. Don't worry about it. Like when you have to refactor your database because SQLite, what, like the promise is that that's a champagne problem and you have a team of people who can help you. That's not my answer, but like, I feel like that's the meme. Like you have no users.
Yeah. Yeah. Like just use this until it literally explodes, you know?
Yeah. And our take is that it can get you pretty far into being, you know, many millions of users, all that stuff.
I mean, I remember like, you know, early days of Rails or, Sinatra, you would like use SQLite locally, and that was the development database. And then you'd like go to production and they'd try to hot swap you to MySQL, and it was like just different enough. Like you'd have, for some reason, it was like you hated SQLite because of that. Like it got a bad rap because of that experience, but it was like, but I think it was just, SQLite was not secure enough or mature enough to run in the cloud or something. That was sort of the idea, I think.
There's a big part here, which is just like computers have gotten so much faster that like SQLite and LibSQL are scaling faster, I'd say, than, I mean, I guess everyone's benefiting from that. But like there was a world where these limitations were probably killer and just meant you couldn't build on it. But now the sacrifices that were made for this lightweight model actually don't really end up, they end up speeding up in other ways because the hardware is much faster. The network is much faster. All these things, the world has changed from, I think, when a lot of these kind of SQLite isn't for production memes started. And that's what I love about this. Yeah. What the Terso team's doing with LibSQL is they're trying to like, no, we can tell this story and believe it and kind of walk the walk, not just talk it.
Yeah. That's really cool. So it's Terso under the hood, and then, But you give like a little admin on the studio site, right? So there's a little more to it than just a SQL database.
Yeah, Chris mentioned WordPress, and I think that's my take on WordPress. I don't know how much anyone else agrees with this, but like I think people think of it as a CMS, but like really, what it is, it's a database and that comes with it that is empowering all the cool stuff, the apps, the ecosystem, like. That's the power of it. So there's a lot of inspiration from that of like, there is this web portal that feels a lot like the WordPress console. It's still, you know, it's new, it's early, but like what you see there are the bones of a database viewer. We shipped a StackBlitz integration. So you can actually open up your repo in StackBlitz, go into the admin portal, make a code change through StackBlitz, come back, and it's all up to date. There's some really cool stuff you can do with this model that we're just kind of scratching the surface of, but essentially a place where you can go to browse your data, interact with it, and hopefully extend that for rich text editors, for different use cases like a comment system. What if there was like an app for your comments, that sort of thing? It's really a web portal for your data.
So what about like patterns is a way that I think about it, that there's always, you know, Jamstack taught us this, that here's a way you can produce a site in this world is to just, you have data wherever it is, static files or a database or something, and then you run a build and you get this static set of files and then you deploy it and it's done. And then there were the opposite of that is that every time a page is hit, it goes and builds that page, which is kind of how WordPress does it out of the box. Right? It makes the queries that it needs. It gets the data, pieces it all together, and then it returns that. And then things got complicated in the Jamstack world because they could say like, oh, we can do that too, though. You can have a page that's not pre-built. You can have it, you know, built by a server on demand as you need it to. And you might choose that path for something like a page that has comments on it because, hey, we want up-to-date comments, you know? I don't want to have to run a site build just so somebody can see a new comment on a post. Or maybe I do want to run a site build, but that site build is so efficient that it knows that the only thing that's changed on the site is there's a new comment, so it just rebuilds that one page or something. Or it's a mixture of that, and the home page is statically rendered and never hits a server that's generating that page, but this page over here is, and stuff. That's kind of where we got with Jamstack, and it just feels like it got weird that each different page has a different pattern of sorts. Is this database kind of adaptable to all of it, or if I opt into the database, am I opted into a world in which every page is built on demand?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. It's something that we have to deal with. WordPress is like, we're a server. Like, you're shipping a server. good luck. And what we're trying to build for is a world where there is, yeah, static sites, dynamic sites, hybrid sites, serverless runtimes, worker runtimes like Cloudflare that are even more limited. Like, that's our audience and we're trying to build for them. So it means we have to play with more limitations. But yeah, ultimately what we shipped was Astro is static site builds by default. And so what this is it's a local database by default. If you're building your site with Astro and you add the database, you're getting a local database. So a seed file, you're seeding it with stuff. It's all local. It's using that SQLite file. And you go to build it, you're getting a static build that used that local database to build the HTML and the CSS and the JavaScript and then kills the database at the end because you don't need it. It's a static site. There's your HTML. Have fun.
What if I like that? Is that cool? Can I like use the database in that way and then ship it with, and I'm not even, it's kind of like the database doesn't even exist on production.
Yeah, it's like the database of the whole hosted story doesn't exist, and that's totally fine. Like a big part of this was making sure, like if you never want to talk to our servers or host a database, like that's why people like static sites. I find it's way less complex. Your operational complexity, your hosting is just static assets. Yeah, people love that, and I love that. Like, don't want to kill that. So yeah, totally possible.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's good. But there's also a world, I assume, where like every blog post on this site is going to, I don't know, what's the right word, dynamically build itself on demand every time it's hit. That's a pattern I can opt into, right?
Yep. And then it's kind of up to you. So start static, and then when you want to go turn your thing that you're deploying into an actual server, make it some level of dynamic. And we offer a bunch of different settings for that. But yeah, that's the day when you say, okay, this is actually a live site with a live database. Mm-hmm. Where does that database run? That's where we would hook into the hosted platform to basically run a command, database gets spun up, and now you're talking to it. Takes less than a minute for most people.
Oh, to like provision the real cloud one and all that. Yeah, right.
And then that's in production. That's what you're using.
Yeah. And then is there a story of like, you're like, okay, I started out with, I don't know, a blog post which has an author, which has a title, which has comments, which is a relational thing, because that's probably a whole different table. But then Dave says, I want emoji reactions too, but I'm adding that a year down the road, which represents, of course, a migration of sorts. There was no way around that, I assume, right? What's the migration story?
Yeah, I feel like that's everyone just takes for granted that databases are easy. Like, oh yeah, this will all be fine. But yeah, okay, I have data here and now I'm making a change to it. How do I make the change and then make sure the data that already exists is taken care of? We basically, when people ask, what is this on top of these technologies that you've chosen to build on? I could do this all myself. One of the things that we've done is build a really simple migration story where you're essentially synchronizing. So it's more, if anyone in the audience has listened to like, or has worked with, I create a new migration every time and I edit it or hand roll it, or maybe it gets auto-generated and I make some tweaks.
Right.
We went the much more simple route of you run this kind of sync command and it's going to synchronize your database, push up any changes. If there's anything that's not backwards compatible that would result in data loss, it tells you to stop and manually kind of resolve that. But otherwise, it's a fully automated process.
Well, that's neat. Yeah. So adding is always simpler than changing or removing, right?
It's renaming that always gets people. Like if I rename a column... No schema has figured out, is that actually a new, have you deleted a column and added a new one at the same time? Renamed one? There's no way to, maybe you could ask an AI to kind of infer it, but there's no really good way to do that.
Yeah.
It wants to like, or at least I've seen it, like it clones that whole column into a whatever temp, and then it like deletes the old column, creates a new one, and then pulls temp back over. That's the best way. Like that's the best way we came up with the.
I just never do it all at once. I always do it like just add it first and get it all working with the new data, and then later worry about the deleting the old.
That's actually really That's actually the model that we push people into, which is it's called expand and contract, and the idea of like add it first. Make sure all the code's working and then delete the data. If you're trying to do it all at once, you're just asking for data loss and bugs. And
yeah,
it's way better to, there's ways to work around it. If you're just like, I don't care, I'm hacking, like leave me alone. We'll just let you kind of force push to the database if that's what you want to do. But for most sites, that's actually a best practice. And what we try and do is make that really easy to work with versus like feeling like a 10-step process, which is how it can feel in a lot of databases.
it can be bad, but you don't want to lose data either. So I like that you at least set up the old fence, like, hey, what you're doing is about to.
It's destructive. Yeah, pretty clutch.
I know Prisma, I use Prisma quite a bit, but I that way is always awesome when it was just like,
Like, they're actually like kind of best in class at this. Like the things that they catch and how well they present them back to you is something that we took a lot of inspiration from.
Because they actually run it in a shadow database, which I ran into some problems because like only certain hosts like support that or whatever. But it was, they basically just try to run it like in a cloned version of your database. And then they sort of like detect errors. And I think that's, I hadn't seen that. That's pretty smart. So, yeah.
I like the seeding story. That's pretty neat. Like, this is all kind of useless locally if like, there's no local data to work with. So, it looks like you have a pretty neat story for that where you just kind of make a seed file and it just puts crap in there.
Something that I'm so excited about, which is it's so funny watching other players in the database space writing branching and merge requests for database and like forking, like I want a different database for every PR. And that's really difficult when you have servers, right? Like each of those PRs is spinning up a new server. But if you're asking what are the trade-offs for SQLite, like for our model, that's actually just a new file, essentially. Like it's like S3 level of complexity for managing some of these things at a certain point where spinning up a new database, forking a database, branching, that's all actually... We already have that for files. Like we already have Git. We already have stuff that can kind of handle that. So there's some really cool stuff that we're going to be able to do over the next couple of months. And
that's wild. Yeah. A database as a file is just a crazy concept.
It's so cool. Unlocks it's so cool. Stuff. Yeah. And so every PR gets its own database, its own seed data, like that spins up, tears down. It's it costs you next to nothing. It's a really, really cool.
There's model. No Docker, no VPN, no like, I'm
trying to feel like the slap chop.
I got a database. Hell yeah. That feels very delicious in a way. You know, speaking of WordPress, though, I'll tell you something I do all the time. And this is just one guy, but there is a very popular plugin that makes this all work, is that you're like, I want my development to pull from production. I just want to click a button. It can take a few minutes if it needs to or whatever. But like, I need to be working with what I'm seeing on production. I want to look at my blog with all my blog posts, with all my comments, with all my everything. But I wonder if that's like, not really the spirit of this, because then if you do that, now your seeding isn't like this minimal set. You know, I always think of seeding as like, it's just like a little bit, you know, we have seeding for our just test at CodePen or whatever that seeds a little baby database so it can pull one little pen and then do some stuff against it. It's trying to be minimal for efficiency. So I wonder if they're what this, I don't have any advice or anything. I'm just kind of curious.
No, I mean, it's like you're replaying the last like month of our, like, so what are the like kind of boundaries between these things? We have the --/ remote flag. So as soon as you want to talk to production data, whether you're building your site, you want it to be talking to production or your local.
Oh, that would do it. That's, you already kind of got it right there then.
But the seeding thing, that means seeding is a dev only concept. So yeah, we're never really seeding your production database. You can write your own scripts and you can seed it yourself. We give you a scripting API for that, but it's not seeding. It's like a different kind of concept, if that makes sense.
So there is no story for like, I'll tell you, this very popular plugin I'm talking about is happy to go both ways. It's like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to pull from production or are you trying to push to production? Because sometimes this would be wild to me. I've never worked this way, but some people work with their WordPress locally, get it how they want, including their database, and then they push the database live, which I'm like, who are you? But that's a thing.
That's fearless. Not, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey man, real cowboys, man. No brave.
Oh, he's back. He's
ain't
back
scared. In the room. Ain't scared.
He's here the whole time.
Yeah.
All right. So it's libSQL. A lot of people are gonna think SQL Lite because that's just has better brand recognition at the moment. Maybe that will change over time. If this is, probably a little heck of a lot of people hearing about this for the first time. Although Dave, you seem to have heard of Terso before. I hadn't. Sorry, Terso.
Terso, but I think I've been kind of following this whole like you know, somebody put SQLite in WASM, and that was maybe Terso. I'm not sure, but it was just like people were like, oops, like almost like I did something awful, but it's kind of cool. That's like where I remember the story was like, I committed a database crime and a SQL crime. And, but it's kind of cool. And I think that was maybe the sort of beginning of this sort of experiment, just this idea, like we can just compile SQLite out and it's cool. So, but no, it seems like they also made like a C binary, right? And so it's like super fast and stuff like that. So, or Rust, it's gotta be in Rust, right? Or Zig, Bun.
I think Bun, Go. Go. I'm just gonna start naming, yeah, Zig, Go, Rust.
The fast one, the blazing fast one. So it's blazing fast.
Well, I'll tell you another thing you don't get in WordPress, really. I mean, maybe there's stuff I don't know about, editor integrations and stuff that I don't know, somehow know about it. But there's not really a schema really in WordPress, you know, like maybe you could generate one from SQL. I've seen that done plenty, but
there is a schema, Chris. It's WP posts. Yeah. And everything just goes in there.
There's not like a schema file, you know. So your editor knows about it. So yeah, maybe there's some fancy editor integrations that just kind of know about stuff, but probably not.
I think it's an interesting, using them as inspiration, like I think it's been a big, like if you look at headless CMSs, there's so much, like everything's a schema, everything is, it's friction, and it's friction to a benefit of having really consistent types and explicit things happening. But
yeah,
I look at WordPress as like the Wild West, like you can do anything. Here's a database, like you figure it out. And there's so much power that comes from that. And then an app ecosystem can kind of build up to create some structure for those who want it and ignore it for those who don't.
Yeah. I guess that is what they're doing. That they're because all sites are the same in a way, you're not really generally structuring the database however you want. When you do something like, you're limited to what they offer. You're like, get author avatar. Yeah, you can do that. It's going to perform whatever database stuff it needs to do to get that. But on these, on an Astro site or the database, unless you're using some kind of template that gets super ultra popular or something, every site's going to have a totally different database structure than the next, right?
Yeah, that's good. I love that. I think that's how it should be. And yeah, I think there is an ecosystem story that like it's day three now. Like I think we will really over time see, are people turning database tables into packages? Like I want to install the blog package for Astro. Is it a theme that comes with a database table? Are there integrations that have tooling tables, UI components all built together? Like I can't tell you what that's going to look like. We have some ideas that we're excited to explore with.
It would be tempting really for me to be like, oh, I need some kind of docs-ish site kind of thing. I'm like, I don't want to think about the data structure all by myself. Give me a good one to start with.
there's a cool site for like, I think it's for Prisma, but it's like recipes, you know, it's like these little, like, just like, here's a block of schema block, and then you just hit play and then it seeds your database, you know, scaffolds it out. So
early on we were looking at a schema.org, which has like anything in the world is like a type. It's an wild project, and we were thinking, can we build on top of this? Tony, who's a core maintainer, was like really excited about that, but one of the problems we ran into is because everything is documented, like it's the worst starter schema in the world. Like a blog post doesn't have an author that's just Fred, it's actually an entire type, and that author has name, which is actually an object. There's first name, there's last name.
Linked, like just super verbose.
By thinking of everything, you have to think of everything, and it becomes really heavy.
Yeah.
Versus there's something about just, I want my author to be the word Fred, and I don't want to think about the right structure. I just want a string. And at the end of the day,
it would be kind of cool to be like, open up, you know, just say, I want a recipe site and I want authors and bingo, send, you know, that would be
kind of. It won't be too long until Copilot is helping you puke that crap out anyway. Devin, you know?
Devin.
So you do that. There's some kind of schema involved in this, right? It's been a minute since I've seen it. So sorry. It just came out, people. Just came out. But you can say, oh, I want like a literally a recipe site. And you put this, you know, I don't know. I've seen video. Ben did a great Twitter video of all this too, where he scoped out an idea like real quickly. And it was like, oh, that's nice. But by virtue of you doing that and whatever other technology, I forget all the different stuff you tuck into Astro. But then you get all this fancy crap while you're authoring your templates, right? Like if you try to ask for a piece of data that isn't there, it's red squiggles all day, baby. It's mean like that doesn't exist, which is so nice. That's the kind of DX that is starting to be like almost more expected in the world, probably thanks to products like Astro and TypeScript, for example, and type-safe languages and stuff. So you get the red squiggles when you're wrong, but you also get autocomplete when you're looking for stuff, right? And you're like, oh, here's blog post, dot, and then it gives me this, you know, list of data that I have access to. That kicks ass, you know? Like, that's real nice.
My favorite type of TypeScript is when you actually don't write any TypeScript yourself and everything is fully typed. Like, that's kind of the experience we're trying to hit here, which is that you define a schema. It's not a TypeScript schema. It's like a database schema. But from that, we set up the types for you. Yeah, autocomplete, red squiggles when you're wrong. And you never had to write a line of TypeScript to get it.
Do you even see the types? Does it generate? Or are they like in a secret Astro folder or something? Or like if I change?
there's a secret Astro folder that they get written to. But a lot of it's also inferred also at runtime. Yeah,
right on. Yeah, we have, you know, when we change data on the code pen, you know, because we're a GraphQL-based site, it's like the stuff just cascades. There's freaking types everywhere, you know, like the GraphQL needs special types. And, you know, I'd call it a mess, but it's a very beautiful mess to me. And I don't mind seeing a PR that has some data change where you see a bunch of types changed too. You're like, well, that's good. That means when I pull this, it's going to... It's going to all work for me too.
You can see the matrix. You see the types, the data. It's all one thing.
Yeah, I was pretty hesitant on all this type crap forever. Just have spending so long of my career just not really worried and thinking about that kind of thing. But, you know, when the DX story gets so much better because of it, it's you know, it can wear you down. You're like, oh, okay, fine, crap. It's maybe better.
I mean, the smartest thing they ever did, maybe it's just like a Microsoft Monopoly play, but I love it. So I guess take that for what it is. VS Code, even if you're writing JavaScript, you're getting the TypeScript. Like, everyone is better for a library or something to be TypeScript, because whether you're writing it or not, your tooling, your editor, like people who are writing TypeScript, everyone has more information to work with. It's really cool when it's all kind of working together.
Yeah, I saw that in there. They had a little documentary about, it was either about TypeScript or VS Code, and there was a little bit in there. They're like, don't like TypeScript? Too bad, you're getting it in VS Code, you know? Like it's happening. That's what powers it. There's no alternate path, you know? You're getting it, which is fine. It's good. Not true in not VS Code, though, you know? So just one thing to... It's a little bit of lock-in, maybe, for that particular piece of software.
I was going to say, I did some digging. LibSQL is a fork of SQLite, because SQLite is not open to contributions.
Oh.
And then they're going to keep a lot of the C, and then they're going to put some REST extensions in there. But I just wanted to do some journalistic integrity there. So they are, it's REST, because REST is fast. So, or it's C plus REST, which that suddenly sounds less secure, and good luck, Fred, on your business.
No.
But
yeah.
No, I think it's great. I think, you know, anyone who works in data knows what's going on. So
this should be a pretty easy upgrade, right? Is the DB release part of 4.5 or whatever? Or is it kind of a separate release? Or?
Yeah, we'll see where it ends up landing. But as of right now, it's an add-on. So you say Astro add DB on your command line, and then we take care of the configuration. We set up.
You don't have to care about this at all. If you're don't care about data, it doesn't matter.
In the future, maybe it ends up inside of Astro itself. I don't actually know, to be honest. I think we're waiting to see what feedback is. Right. Like, it works really well as an add-on, because it's just kind of out of the way for people who don't care.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll stay that way.
I love it. I mean, you know, I have my big dump bookshelf on my website. You know, we're probably coming up on 1,000 books or something. Or you know, and like, it's or it's at least 300. But like, you know, there's a delta there. I'm not sure.
The 3x delta. Yeah.
Who knows? I'm no statistician.
Yeah, I've read 10 books, a million books. I don't know. I could never keep track.
Okay, it's 10 books. It's 10 books I read over and over.
Dave can read, just to be clear.
It's my children's books. It is, so it's, 300. It is like a 50,000 line YAML file. It is not the best thing. I split up the YAML file. That feels pretty good. But what would maybe be cooler is just hitting a database, and even like paginating the database, like progressively loading, you know, doing like some intersection observery, infinite scrolly, not that like infinite, but I could load year by year, you know, like just like kind of have like maybe even a more intelligent version of it where I like timestamp the date created, it's sorted by date created, not just order in file, you know, it's, you could then play with stuff through filtering, like you're saying, and it's actual like database filtering, not like CSS filtering, you know, I think that would be pretty cool upgrade, you know? I had this idea for like this podcast site, you know, and it's like, I started down the YAML file thing just to prototype it, you know, but I'm like 50 podcasts in and I'm like, God, it would be nice to have a database, you know? So already I'm like, ooh, Astro has a database. So that's probably where that's what I'm reaching for. So
and isn't the seeding such a cool part of that story too? If you wanted to show that or give it to somebody, you give it to them, not just with the schema, but with some data too. So if you're going to try it, you could be like, there's immediately some books in your book database or some podcasts in your podcast database to use and see.
Yeah, you run it, you get it. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty cool. So I could just share it as like, you know, and I think the idea was, you know, in my head it was like, oh, I'll build a whole entire app, you know, like Letterboxd for podcasts, you know, and that's fine. But like, maybe I don't build that. Maybe I do like what you're saying, Chris, like build something that other people can build, you know, like build something to where somebody can just clone a repo and have their own podcast shelf, you know, or bookshelf.
Sell for $100, so. Man. Is that what's the scene on that? Oh, like,
I need money. That's great.
I'm sure there's plenty of all kinds of open source free ones, but man, there were some empires built on WordPress themes, not to say that word too much, but have you seen the paid theme thing happen?
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, it feels like an entire like industry, like there's a class of industry and like the IRS is like code system of WordPress themes.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, are you seeing it in Astro land? Is there a paid Astro theme yet? Yeah. Some.
Cool. So we have a couple, a couple of like pretty prominent, there's like the shops that do themes and they've been building for Astro, but there's a couple of people who are now like dedicated Astro theme builders. And so if you go to astro.build website, there's a theme catalog. One of the cool things we shipped this week was also a portal for theme authors. So you can actually log in, manage your theme submissions. Like this was all done out of a GitHub repo and like literally like raw JSON. It was a mess. But now there's an actual web portal. So the idea is that this can be a place where, yeah, we really care about themes. I think it's a...
Yeah, you auth with GitHub and you say, that repo, that's a theme for Astro. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, here's the information. Right. Here's the four, you know, beautiful screenshots. Come back a week later, you want to change stuff up, you can. It's
just a... Okay, that's cool.
It's a thing that we care a lot about. I think in the future, like if we wanted to add sort of paid themes, like now we have a place for you to actually get paid. Like, I think there's a really cool story there that
it
we want to explore.
It does seem like a big deal. There's a whole class of user that's like not interested in building a site absolutely, totally from scratch, right?
Yeah, and Tailwind, I feel like everyone like has been, there seems to be UI kits and like from framework, like people seem to be really appreciating that more now than I think they did a couple, like, up until a couple of years ago, I was probably just like themes. Yeah. Okay. That's kind of nice. But then like secretly I would go and try and find a theme anytime I built a site. Like I don't want to set up like the bare bones. I just want something out of the box that's close to what I want, but I want to be able to hack it. And yeah, themes are super cool.
This also seems the data thing. I mean, seems like a natural progression. I mean, I think you've called that out specifically in some of the writings around it, but it was like, it was 2.0 that had content collections and that this is a really tight integration with that, right? Like I don't know. It seems like that, right? Like if you're going to make a podcast app or something that has this podcast type, that it should be a content collection probably, right?
Yeah, well, we moved past Dave's. Yeah, Dave was talking about how like, yeah, 300 YAML files you mentioned, I think, in a repo. Like at a certain point, the scale is going to be tough or you're going to want to do something with that that's a bit more dynamic than just throwing it all in an query and CSS filtering. So yeah, I think that's where it's, we're really unopinionated. Like start with local markdown, start with local. If you just want to import a JSON file from your file system, I mean, Astro's a web framework, it can do that. So like, I think what we're trying to do is basically have all these different kind of moments, like the super simple one file, the several files, but I don't really care that much. And then like the, okay, this is thousands of books in a file system, like making it really easy to jump from point to point and having an option for all those things. Because I think what's best for managing 10,000 books is not going to be the best for managing three. And I don't think it's not smart to try to think that that's all one system.
Yeah, for sure.
So interesting.
Can I do protected routes? Like, so I want to add books to my bookshelf or my podcast shelf, like, and I want to, only me can do that from the production. Is that like something I can do, like easily just chuck some auth, or am I in clerk.dev territory, or what's going on?
That's all. We're like days away, I think, from someone publishing like the canonical like user auth in AstroDB, but our own theme portal has that. So we as admins can log in to manage themes, but most people in the community are logging in to submit themes. All powered by Astro. It's AstroDB all the way down. User auth, image uploads, form submissions. Yeah, it can do it all. And yeah, protected routes. Again, it's where you're kind of hitting the limits more of what a static site can do than what Astro can do. That's where you kind of have to make that move into a server rendered site. But we try to make that as seamless as possible.
Sure. Yeah.
That does seem like it would be coming, right? Like you could imagine, yeah, fine, you can leave comments on my blog, but I'm not even going to let you do it unless you auth somehow.
Yeah.
And then you, once you're auth, then some of that data comes along with the comment.
What's the thing about like Clerk, which I love, like Clerk is, I think their DX is kind of unmatched. And I think,
what is Clerk?
Clerk is, it's like, what if I don't want to think about this? What if I just want like drop in auth?
Zero work OS sort of situation. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
But they've done a great job of like, it feels like you're using React components. You're not like setting up this enterprise tech. It's a really great DX. But I think I really outed
myself not knowing about all these tools. And then I go to their landing page and it's like all these people I know with great quotes. And I'm like, oh, God dang, man.
It just means you have a life, Chris. It means you.
It's like your face on it. It's like, Chris, Corey, like, this is the best. And you're like, what?
I love Clerk. I've been using it for years. What?
I depend on Clerk. What?
Yeah, it looks amazing. God,
Clerk
dang
is cool.
It. I need to get around.
I think it's one of those things where it's like Clerk is a great DX, and the way that they accomplish that is by hosting your auth tables, essentially like your user table for you. And I think one thing I'm curious to see if this works is if AstroDB, can we give the same DX of like a Clerk? But it's a community project. We're not building it ourselves. There's already this project called Lucia, which is a great auth library. Can we leverage open source ecosystem stuff? And then just provide the database. So at the end of the day, it's your database table. You can export it whenever you want. We're hosting it for you, but go do it in Terso if you'd prefer directly, or your own SQLite server. And it's the same DX, but without the external host.
Yeah, like the recipe for passkeys or something. Because like, I don't want your password. Like, especially on DaveRupert.com. Like, I literally don't want that liability. You know, like, so if you can just passkey in and, you know, and then your phone says, yep, that's Dave Rupert. I'm stoked. So,
I mean, Firebase did this like 10 years ago, right? Like, that's why social auth, baby.
Yeah.
But passkeys now is the answer, you know, probably.
Yeah, thank God. It couldn't have come soon enough. Although, it's so funny. As a user, I'm like, oh, the stupid passkey thing.
I don't have a single one set up, but I want it. I don't know.
I'm
like, oh, thank God, the savior. As a user, I'm like, this sucks. I hate this.
My hiccup is like, 1Password always asks me first. You know, they're like, do you want to use a passkey, dude? And I'm like, I don't know if I want you to have it. Maybe if my phone asks me, I need a video. Somebody who like
1Password already has all your passwords. I feel like they're already, you're in too deep to be worried now.
Is the strategy to get out or marry them? I don't know. So, you know,
you need the export 1Password. Yeah, I have no idea what that looks like, to be honest.
It is fair, kind of, as you forget about which things sync to what, kind of like if you set up your passkey for Google on your laptop, but you have other laptops and phones and stuff. What's syncing it? Is it nothing? Is it the iCloud keychain? Is it Google themselves somehow?
I have 1Password, and I set up all my kid passwords with 1Password, and it's the bane of my existence because I am now the bottleneck for every login situation in the house, you know? And oops, I was just trying to not get us hacked. But now I'm like, hey, Dad, I want to
post-it
be inside
notes,
robot.
Dave. You put a post-it note inside your cabinet.
We had it right all along.
Well, yeah. I mean, that is a tried and true method. And maybe some family members do use that. But it is. But I think like for me, I'm like, oh, if I had just put all this on Apple and not done the whole Windows thing, but like if I just put all these passwords on Apple, then I would have no problem. But then I think also my kid could log into my bank, and that seems like a problem too. So I don't know. I don't know.
It's clerk is the answer.
I need like a computer scientist to manage my passwords. That's what a secretary who has a degree in computer
science. My mom's got this big, big giant manila folder, you know, where you can put stuff inside from the top, and the front of it is just 20 years of chicken scratches of what, you know, oh no, it's not that anymore. It's, you know, my old dog, 1984.
Every time they've forgotten it and then had to reset it and then rewritten it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. I'll send you the spreadsheet. No, please don't. Please stop. That don't, violates don't my do own it. Corporate policy.
All right. Well, hey, congrats on the big launch of this. It feels a little new to the world to me. It feels like a fresh take on this sort of thing that I have not seen before.
That's what we're all about. That's the highest form of praise for what we're trying to do. So yeah, we'll see.
But also seems very like not like, how does this work? Which is apparently we're getting to that age, which ugh, don't love it. But this is not in that category. I'm like, oh, I get it. You know?
Yeah. Ooh. You avoided the Homer car, which is really good. I think you avoided a Homer car situation. And
again, you should have seen the conversations over the last couple of weeks of like, have we built the Homer? Yeah. It's like, it's always tough when you're doing this, like where are the lines? But yeah, look, we'll see how people use it. I think it's the fun part about Astro is we definitely are like building it alongside.
How does that kind of feel like you want to think of a reason to use it too? You know, you're like, ooh, that looks fun. I'm going to put something in that.
Well, if you get tired of it, you kill the free plan, Fred, and just, you know,
we
just
forgot
walk
to talk
away.
About that.
We got
that
there. We got there eventually.
It was killer timing.
He's been holding that in his pocket the whole time.
How did you time your release with their implosion? That is just incredible. No,
so, what's the news someone, for real? No, just do it for the people listening so they know what we're talking about.
Planescale, who we had Planescale on. They're great. They offer a really awesome, super scalable MySQL product, but they did kind of a layoffs plus we're killing the free plan blog post, and that was not well received in the community, I believe. So I feel like that's, I don't know. Unless Fred has other takes, but...
layoffs, killing the free plan, and you have a month to get off it. And don't worry, everything's fine was kind of also the weird little subtext.
And the paid plan is $40 or something like that. And so like it was a really generous free plan, we should say. Like it was like a million rows or something like that, or 100 million rows or something.
It
wild.
It teaches the world a crappy lesson though. It says, here's a way to start a company, have free plans for a long time and then rug pull them. It's just, that's literally what happened. So what's the deal? And, you know, Fred's sitting right here. I mean, it's not infeasible that at some point, what's the pricing of that? I don't even look. Let's do it for the air though. So it's how much does the hosted DB cost? Is it just a flat rate or how do you bill it?
Yeah. So we have a free plan. We're pretty proud of it. Like, yeah, by the way, the timing of this, we did not plan that. This is a weird cosmic coincidence that this is all happening, that they're removing their free plan right as we're trying to ship a pretty generous one. But a billion row reads a month, a million writes a month, a gigabyte of storage. I think a big thing for us.
Oh, you just have there's some metered stuff. And
yeah, it's all metered and all usage based. So again, for us, like the tech stack is essentially like you're paying for storage at rest, but if you're not making requests, there's no server, there's no shutdown or spin up, or it's one of the things I love about our model. And we knew this going in, so we got to design for it, where maybe if there is a fault of these free plans that get yanked later, it's because, oh shit, at scale, this is really expensive. And you know, you can't really fault, I guess, realizing that and wanting to build a company that doesn't go under. But for us, knowing this would matter, we built the whole tech stack around this use of, you know what, it's going to cost nothing at rest. It's really, really cheap and affordable and efficient. And that lets us then actually offer this without breaking the bank, without, you know, whether we hit a million databases or, you know, just 20, it's all pretty cheap. It all just depends on how much they're being used and aligning our incentives with our users. So if you're using it, you pay us. If you're not, fantastic. and a pretty big window before you even have to start having that conversation.
And there's some world, just so, you know, like I don't want to start this on a negative thing though, but this is brand new for you, you know, like the planet scale thing could theoretically happen to you. I'm not saying it's going to.
It's the hard thing is really, and I don't really know what the right answer is here. You can see me kind of probably struggling with it. It's like, you want to just be like, no, don't worry about it. Trust me. It's like, oh, no, that's exactly what I don't want to do. It's like, I want to know for sure it's not going to happen. Cause like Heroku.
Well, and I
got bought by Salesforce, new leadership come in, yanked. And it's tough. It's, there is no,
well, there's unlimited examples of this.
Based on my 10-to-1 free to paid Heroku usage, I understand your decision.
The thing I'll say about it is like the big thing for me is I think it all, and like, I think this is just a human nature thing. Like it always comes down to incentives. Like why is anyone incentivized? And what I'm trying to do, because at this moment we care about this, we want it to last forever. It's all about then, can we actually put in place things now that like, you know, the incentives would make no sense for us to remove it. And GitHub is the example I used in a tweet the other day of like, if GitHub killed their free plan, no one uses GitHub. Like there is no GitHub without the open source community behind it. And I think there's an analogy here of like, if we ever imagine that press release going out and imagine it being like, why are they killing the entire reason this thing exists? That's what we're going for. That's what I'm trying to aim for here. It should be so dumb for us to ever pull it that even an evil version of ourselves would never do that.
I wonder what you'd hit first. I guess it just really super duper depends. But just to make this clear, it's ridiculously generous. I mean, to me, it seems a billion reads a month, which is that's a lot of reads, I'll say, and 1 million writes per month, which is even more, really, because as you laid out, it's generally writes are more rare, especially in a content focused website. And then 1 gigabyte of storage, and you're not putting JPEGs in there, right? So a gigabyte of text is a freaking lot. So yeah, good luck breaking that. I'd be surprised if anybody, you know, it's been, you know, as this airs, it'll have been out a week. I would very much doubt anybody's hit it. Yeah.
I can do it.
Good luck. No, it's one of those things where it's like, it's what I love about the usage-based model is like it incentivizes you to be efficient, like with your own database. Like I did a stream with a Primogen, if you all know him, a couple days ago or weeks ago now. And the thing that I demoed, threw it to 5,000 people or however many people he had in his audience. It was super inefficient. Like every request loaded like, you know, thousands of rows. Like I could have refactored that and cleaned it up and it would have been, you know, a couple of rows. It would have been super lightweight. So I think it just encourages good practices in terms of efficiency on your end. It's a, you know, it totally aligns everyone's incentives. If you use it a lot, pay us. If you don't, that's great. Whatever that means, whether that's low traffic or just really efficient use of the database, both are valid.
Oh, I like crank down those dials, man. Just a little bit.
You trying to get me rug pulled? You trying to rug pull me? We stand by that. We think we can do it. I mean, it's early access. I would be shocked if it changed at this point because it's just part of the tech.
Oh, no, I'm sure it won't or whatever. That's fine. It's just when you get to, it feels like that scale is right at the same moment where people might consider a different architecture altogether. Yeah. You don't want to miss them on the way up. You know?
That's true. That's our goal, is that this should scale well past this without anyone breaking a sweat.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. I imagine, too, you're going to get that. This will be the most common annoying email from you. It's like, I really want to use this, but we need to host it. And then you'll be like, sorry.
No, not annoying. Yeah, it makes total sense. I think, I can't remember, were we talking about this? Like the idea of, we've designed this all to be vertically integrated. So like, it's not something like we intentionally are not shipping self-hosting, but at the same time, it's open source tech. Like we want you to be able to play around with it. And if a hacker culture or someone just ships the like open source self-hosted version of this, like if someone wants to maintain that, that's great. But we're trying to kind of walk that line where we don't want to block it like for no good reason. But at the same time, there's things we're doing because it's hosted that you couldn't do otherwise. And we don't want to shut those doors either.
You know, it's really secure. A file on the VPN.
Just a couple files of YAML. Never got hacked.
Static file, you know, database
file. The trick is not caring if it's secure.
I do not stand by that. Just to be clear, someone now running a database company. That is
no. Very secure.
I do need that next to Chris's face. I need that to be on the homepage of Clerk.
Yeah. The trick is, this is Chris's front-end master's security course, is the trick is, don't put anything up unless you really want it out there. So there you go.
It's love from it. That. Was it Prometheus or something? There's like a robot in that movie, and he keeps like holding a lighter under his finger, and he's like, "You know what the trick is? Not minding that it hurts." It's creepy as hell. Whoa. I love it.
That's a good one.
All right, we
got
to go. It's over.
Yeah, that's a good one to end
on. That note.
Yeah.
All right.
Fred, for people who are not following you and giving you money, how can they do that?
Follow me on Twitter, Fred K. Schott, and Astro is astro.build. That's both the website, astro.literal.build, and then the Twitter handle is astro.dot.build. Yeah, I would say, if everyone's hearing this, it's after our launch week, but you can go there and see a recap of everything we put out this week, including AstroDB. Yeah, it's been a crazy week. So thanks all for letting me come on here and talk about what we're doing.
Very exciting. Well, thank you. And yeah, I'm excited to get it's really is hitting me at a perfect time where I had this idea brewing and then it got too big. And then I was like, I'm not going to do it. And then it was like, oh, wait, this is coming out soon. So it was like, I think
yeah, where would you have time? You've been reading 5,000 books a day, I think is what you said, right?
A lot. And it is keeps me busy.
Yeah.
But hey, they wouldn't put them in the library if you weren't supposed to read them, you know? Sometimes a whole entire library is just a to-do list, you know? So all right. Well, thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcast. Your choice. Be sure to start our favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Mastodon, because that's the good one. And then head over to patreon.com/shoptalkshow and join us in the Discord. Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
Shoptalkshow.com.
Dave, did that cowboy just walk in behind you? Is he back?
All right. Hey, y'all. Good show. Can't wait to put my photos online, if you know what I mean.